This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 263, where AC and I are going to talk about what's making news with Azure and Office 365, recorded July the 9th, 2018.
Raygun provides full-stack error, crash, and performance monitoring for tech teams. Whether you're a software engineer looking to diagnose and resolve issues with greater speed and accuracy, a product manager drowning in bug reports, or you're just concerned you're losing customers to poor quality online experiences, Raygun can provide you with the answers. Get full stack error and performance monitoring in one place. The next time you're struggling to replicate errors and performance issues in your codebase, think Raygun. Head over to raygun.com, get up and running within minutes, and dramatically improve the online experiences of your users.
AC.
Hey, CJ.
Looking a little laggy there, buddy.
I'm quite laggy today.
Partying a little hard, huh?
I had a very fun evening. We are involved with our local swim community for our team and our swim board, and coaches had our postseason party
blowout.
Last night. It was a blowout. So we definitely blew off some steam. The only thing I guess we didn't really think about is that our season's not exactly over yet. Our championship meet is next weekend, and I'm in charge of running the computer for that. And so guess what I have to do today?
Go get all that set up and ready to roll.
Yeah, so I've got about 1,000 kids that I gotta start putting in a meet and assigning them lanes and all that stuff throughout the day today and tonight. So I didn't really factor that in when I was when we were finishing off maybe the second or third bottle last night.
Ouch. Oh well. Hey, it's got to be done as well. You got to take one for the team.
Yeah, it's going to get done. So how about yourself? You look a lot more alive than I am today.
Yeah, I feel pretty good. I've got a bunch of travel coming up, which is daunting. So we've got a family vacation holiday to New Zealand coming up at the end of this week. And I'm heading to New York tomorrow night for a couple of days before that. And I fly back from New York about 10 hours before I leave to go to New Zealand. And it's overnight. So I arrive Friday night at 10:30 or 11 p.m. or something, and I leave the next morning at 8:30 in the morning.
Yeah, we're both staring down the barrel of some pretty rough travel.
It's going to be ugly. Let's just say that. Yeah, I'm not going to be happy about that. But
we're recording on a Monday, which is very unusual for us. But yeah, we're just trying to do the best we can. And let's just say the podcast over the next 3 weeks, we are going to be doing our most valiant effort.
Yes. I hope to be able to record one from the beach in Fiji on my way back to the States, which I think will be kind of cool. Just, you know, like sitting on a lounge chair with my laptop and like some coconut trees blowing in the background. I reckon it'll be pretty awesome.
Oh, yeah. You totally should do that. I think we've got, there are 2 weeks, I think, where we are planning where we're going to each do our solo shows coming up.
Yep.
Where you're going to do a solo show and I'll do a solo show. And it's just because, so you're going to be gone for what, leaving this week and then the next 3 weeks? Is that right?
Yes, that's right.
So including this week, we're both looking, staring in the barrel of 4 weeks of travel. So I don't have a trip this week, but gone next week, the following week, come home and like similar to you, like 12 hours later, jumping in a car and after flying back from the West Coast, driving 8 hours and then back and forth. But we do have plans to get back together for one show like in 3 or 4 weeks. So
yeah. It'll be nice to get home, but I'm also looking forward to the trip, obviously.
Cool.
But today we're going to cover some news and announcements and bits and bobs going on with Azure and Office 365. We've had a lot of interviews over the last couple of months, I guess, with Build and all of those things happening. So yeah, it'll be nice to get some news. And obviously we'll have some interviews over the next few weeks as well, as we've got some solo shows coming up and stuff like that. And hopefully we'll get back together for one of those weeks and get to chat. It won't be a month. Otherwise I'll miss you too much. You know,
yes.
it'll feel weird.
I'm just looking forward to being back at my desk before I even leave. I mean, I have this week, but after that, I'm looking forward to getting back at my desk and being able to get back to work, because it's, even if it's business travel, you know, you can't, there's only so much you can get done when you're on the road. So
yeah, exactly. It's always nice to get back to your own shower and bed, right?
Oh, shower, bed, coffee, and internet.
Exactly. Nice. Oh man. Yeah. I'm already missing it.
A 99.9% SLA means you're protected from power outages, bad patches, natural disasters, and maybe even a dinosaur attack. Does it protect you from yourself, though? EvPoint Backup for SharePoint Online provides full fidelity backup and recovery from individual items to entire sites. EvPoint can run backups up to 4 times a day to ensure your data is secure. Recover anytime you want without having to pick up the phone and schedule restore windows. Learn why EvPoint is the Microsoft Cloud expert at www.evpoint.com.
All right, so AC, let's get stuck into some news. Do you want to kick things off with us? You've added a few to our list here. We've got a little bit to get through, really, don't we?
We do, yeah. It's a lot of good Azure stuff. There's some really interesting things I've talked about recently. And a lot of the news is hot off the presses, like this one that came out just in this past week from the Azure blog, where Azure is launching tamper-proof Azure immutable blob storage for financial services. So the idea here is that once the data gets written, it's immutable. Once the data is written to the disk, to Azure storage, it's immutable. You can't modify it. You can't delete it by anybody, even those who have admin privileges. That stuff is set there for good. So it's called WORM policies, write once, read many policies, and they apply to all storage tiers, hot, cool, and archive.
Interesting. So it's kind of like that little clip that you used to be able to take out of the side of a floppy disk and make it read-only.
There's a throwback for you. I hadn't thought about that in a long time.
Put a little sticker around the edge there to make it writable again.
Yeah.
Is that right? Something like that.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, but except you can't do that with this, huh?
Mm-hmm.
I can just imagine the developer testing this out and like writing a whole bunch of test data to it and then being like, don't!
Yeah.
How do I get rid of that? Sorry, you can't.
Yeah, 4 terabytes. So that it brings up a good question, though. Do you lose your... If the credit card stops working, then... What happens?
Somebody deletes it, I'm sure.
Eventually it's going to go away.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, what happens if you whack the resource group or delete the storage account or your credit card runs out or, I don't know, something like that. I'm sure it's deletable, of course, but not by the customer.
Yeah, somewhere along the line, Jeffrey Snover is going to hit the delete button on you.
Yeah, exactly. He's like, I bet there's a big red button. It's like, delete this thing. Yeah. I got another one here. This is an interesting one. Access Control Service, ACS, the old ACS, not the container service that came before AKS, but ACS, Access Control Service, was kind of the precursor to the way we did OAuth and apps and stuff like that with Azure AD.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of been taken over by Azure AD for in terms of app registration and all that sort of stuff. But ACS is being given the retirement notice again. So this news came out quite a while ago, I think, that it was going to be deprecated, but November the 7th, and then it's kaput. Well, at least then things stopped working. Now, the interesting thing with this is like the SharePoint add-in model uses ACS behind the scenes. That's, you know, when you go app reg new and all that, and you go create your app IDs and secrets and all that, that uses ACS behind the scenes for app registration. And my understanding is that SharePoint are taking over running it to keep all that stuff going. So I think if you're just using ACS directly, then you're in trouble. But if you're using ACS sort of indirectly through the SharePoint add-in model, then I think you'll be okay, I believe. I don't think they've done the consolidation of that with Azure AD yet.
No, they haven't. And my understanding is that is somewhere, I don't know who's running it. I hadn't heard that part. That's news to me. But that was the APIs that SharePoint needs in order for their add-in model to work and their app security and stuff. That part is not being deprecated. That stuff is still all in place. But it's like you said, it's for us to use it. It's no longer available. It's not going to be available to us. That's what's being deprecated. But for SharePoint to use it, that's what is still going to be okay going forward.
Yeah. So a little deprecation. Actually, that service has been around a really long time.
Mm.
That was, gosh, that came out, I want to say, around the SharePoint 2013 timeframe. Something like that.
Something, yeah. It came out very soon after SharePoint 2013 came out. Maybe a year or so after
the notice. Yeah, something like that.
It's been out for a while. So this is the 4-month notice.
Yep. So kiss your ACS apps goodbye November 7th. What will be interesting to see is if any enterprises are using it that don't realize those devs have moved on and things stop working. I guess we'll see.
Definitely see.
Excellent. What else you got there?
I got another one here, and this is going to be on the storage side. This was a little nugget that was announced at Build, but it wasn't. I saw somebody else tweet about it. I never saw any of the Azure news. It's Azure Storage is launching in public preview the ability to host a static website on Azure Storage. Now, this is something you've been able to do on AWS S3 for a while now. The idea here is that, you know, if you're building a dynamic site like using .NET or Node or something like that, you still want to use Azure Web Apps. But there's a bit of a trend where people are creating static websites. So you have some tool that generates all the content statically instead of having some sort of a CMS and having that publish it out. So, you know, if you've used it, like the Pages capability of in a GitHub repository, or you've heard of things like Jekyll or Hugo, this would make a really good sense for using those things. So I know that I'm planning on redoing my blog as a Hugo-based site or as a static site and getting off the CMS that I've been using, just tired of working with CMSs. Just seems to be a much simpler, much faster approach. And when you put it on storage, Azure Storage, it's going to be a hell of a lot faster because it's not, there's nothing interactive to it. And it's just any kind of interactivity you want to add to the site. It's all just client-side stuff, which is all I need for my site. Now, I'm curious to play with this and to see what you can do with this. Like, are you going to be able to maybe have it backed by the CDN at the same time if you have, you know, your own custom domain on it? So, will the CDN respect the URL that everything's going to be set up on it? Or is that just a static website, just a checkbox, and it says, you know, hey, if you get a 404 here, you have the ability to specify what's the default document, what's the file not found or the error document, what's that path? You put those in there. So it'd be really cool to see.
Yeah, that'd be nice for Hugo apps or Hugo-generated sites and things, right?
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
It'd be nice options for just throwing some stuff up there.
Yeah, I hope to see if they have like we have with Azure Web Apps where we can tie it to a repository so that when you do a push, it can automatically go ahead and update the site like we can with an Azure Web App. That's the big thing I really hope that they do, because if they do that, then I'd love to use this for my site.
Yeah, for sure. Very cool. Speaking of new services, Azure Elastic database jobs are now in public preview. So this was a thing that you could, I think, I never actually used it, but a thing that you could download and use on-prem or in your own environments, but you had to host it yourself and all that sort of stuff. Mm. But now Azure Elastic database jobs are in public preview. So these are things where you could schedule jobs that are effectively T-SQL scripts, right? That you can go and run against one or many databases. So like, say you've got, I don't know, a multi-tenant SaaS system that compartmentalizes customer data each in different databases, right? And so say you've got like 500 databases or 50 databases, whatever it happens to be, you can go run a job against all of those databases and do them in parallel and it will manage it. So you can go, it could be like schema upgrades against each of those DBs, could be data exports out of each of those databases, something like that. It can run against multiple servers, against multiple SQL Azure pools, can run against databases in different subscriptions as well. So it doesn't all have to be sort of in one spot. But yeah, it gives you kind of a nice way to manage that job execution across a bunch of different databases in different places. So really, the sky's the limit with these things. Schema upgrades are always a royal pain in the butt for every developer on the planet, no matter what technology you use, for example. Deploying changes to databases always seems to be the bane of like any app developers or operations team's existence, right? It's always painful. So this is sort of aimed at helping with that. Yeah. I imagine you could use it for things like data replication, like if you were just wanting to copy some data from one place to another, you know, read-only kind of thing as well. You could do all sorts of stuff with it. So it'd be interesting to see what people do with it. But now it's a fully hosted service in Azure as opposed to having to run it yourself. It's basically the nuts and bolts of that preview announcement.
Awesome. I got a pair of ones here around Azure Search, but before we do that, let me hear a little word from one of our sponsors.
Yay!
Are you being asked repeatedly to integrate different business systems in ever narrower timeframes and with increasing process complexity? What if you could standardize the way you build these business processes so your team are focusing on higher value tasks versus the nuts and bolts of running the processes and integrations? Nintex can make it happen. With a Nintex platform, workflows from person to person, system to system, to the cloud and back. Got a custom system you want to connect with? No-code extensions let you plug into systems simply and easily using REST and Swagger. With Nintex, work just flows, so your teams can work smarter, work faster, and be more connected than ever. Try it out free for 30 days at www.nintex.com/try NWC.
All right. So with my new site that I'm working on for andrewcon.com, and I guess we're doing it as well, we're also working on it for the podcast. We're going to relaunch our show on a new site. God, we got to do that.
We really do have to get onto this, don't we?
We've talked about it. We've designed it. We know exactly how it's going to work.
Yeah. We just got to pull the trigger.
We just got to do it. But one of the things that I'd like to use for my site, and I'd love to use it as well for the podcast as well, is using Azure Search. So using the feature, the PaaS service that Microsoft has for Azure Search. And this week, we have two bits of news with it. We have one GA and one preview announcement. So the preview announcement is that probably the most or one of the most requested features on User Voice for Azure Search is the ability to do autocomplete. So autocomplete, also think about like type ahead search, like if you've done it on any of the other search engines, you know that that's a capability. And what it does is that when you go to type something in, it's exactly what it's, what you would think it is. If you start typing in, you know, the work like executive, you do EXE, it's going to give you a couple different options. So there's two different, it has a couple different modes. There's one term where it returns every single term, which autocomplete against the partial term that you have there. So if you type W-O, you're going to get woman, wool, wood. It does it with two terms. So you can have it, you know, refer to two different terms inside the query. And then, or have it, you know, use a little bit more context. And then there's one term with context. So if I do wonderful space D, then it looks for, oh, you're looking for wonderful day or wonderful dog. You also have like fuzzy lookups and stuff. It's very similar to another feature they have called suggested results. But suggested results are like if I started typing in the little animation they have in the blog post, if I type in EXE for, say, executive, well, if I do it with, that's what autocomplete is going to give me is like executive or exemptions or execute. Whereas if I type it in for suggested results, I do EXE, you get things like executive agency, counsel, executive director, executive agent. So different things like that. So that's,
gotcha.
That's the preview feature that they've announced. The GA feature that they've announced is synonyms. And so being able to say that, you know, the word, a certain word has different synonyms to look up in my search. So if I do like, was it like AAD, that really is a synonym with Azure Active Directory.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of needed for search. People call things different things all the time. And if you don't get matches back that you expect, a little painful.
Yes. Yes.
Excellent. Hey, I've been doing some more stuff, you know, following on from last week's show. I've been tooling around with Kubernetes some more. And one of the interesting use cases we came up with was internally, it was for our builds, right? For building our product. And historically, we've used Travis CI for doing our builds. And they do like hosted builds basically in a cloud service, right? So triggers off GitHub commits, goes and does your builds, then pushes Docker images into Docker Hub. That's basically it in a nutshell, right? But we thought, we've had a few problems with Travis over the time. Like we pay for a Travis account. But I tell you what, I would pay 10 times as much for builds that happen quickly. And Travis has been good, but it's extremely variable how fast your build kicks off and then how fast it is as well in their hosted infrastructure. I don't know why, some sort of voodoo magic, I don't know. But anyway, it's driven us up the wall from time to time, you know, because when you need a build, like, it really impacts developer productivity. Right? Somebody makes a commit, it needs to go get built, pushed out into an environment, tested, all that sort of stuff. And the speed of that happening is really critical to developer productivity. So anyway, we've been thinking about moving for a while. And one of our engineers, Jess, came up with the idea of hosting the VSTS build agent in our development Kubernetes service, AKS, in Azure. And because, you know, basically our dev environment sits there idle, like, 95% of the time, right? It's got stuff running on it, but it's not like the CPU's not pegged, memory's not pegged, all that sort of stuff, right? 95% of the time. And so she was like, why don't we stick a VSTS build agent or 10 in our Kubernetes cluster? And turns out it was possible. So I wrote a blog post about it. You can go check it out if you've got an AKS cluster sitting there and you want to deploy your VSTS build agents to it. Fortunately, the VSTS build agents are really simple Docker images already, so you don't have to do any of that. And really, all you have to do is deploy the thing to Kubernetes. And so I whipped up a Helm chart for helping to deploy that to VSTS. And so now you can just edit one file, give it your account name, the name of the pool that you want the agents put in, an access token, you know, to authenticate, and how many of them you want in the replica count field. And then Helm install, one command, boom, you've got X many VSTS build agents running in the cloud and connected up with your VSTS account. And so now all of our builds, it's kind of a little bit like Inception, right? Because all of our builds are running in the environment that the builds end up in. It's pretty funny. But yeah, so now we're switching all of our builds to VSTS with those build agents.
So you're using a virtual machines that have Kubernetes installed in them for your production and development.
AKS,
yeah.
So one command to spin up an AKS cluster, right, of X many nodes that you want, and it's all wired up, no manual work, yep.
And then your entire environment is up and running, and you're in dev, so everybody can test it out. And then you're also using that environment to not only build, but then to also update your Docker images that you need that are then going to be used by that exact same environment to go run those things.
Yep.
That is a bit of Inception. That's pretty cool though. That's just pretty cool to show like how, but that's a power of like, you know, elastic cloud kind of scale, and you're being able to get a hell of a lot more density utilization out of that environment.
Yeah, for sure. And you might say why, right? And that's a very good point, right? Because VSTS gives you hosted builds as well. Mm-hmm. So you can host agents, right? So you don't have to do any of this yourself if you want. But the differences are, from my understanding at least, and the reasons why we did it, were pricing. So if you want concurrent builds, multiple concurrent builds in VSTS, you pay per concurrent build. Mm-hmm. And so if you want three, I think it's like $80 a month per concurrent build or something like that. I think something like that. So if you want concurrent builds, we've got lots of different services, right? So when we do a push and it touches, say, three or four different services, we didn't want to have to stack them in terms of builds. We wanted, you know, to at least two or three concurrent things happening. Mm. So that was the first reason. It's much cheaper to do self-hosted builds. So I think it goes down to $15 a month if you want to do self-host builds. And I think if you have MSDN accounts, you get for each user in your VSTS environment that has MSDN, you get one additional self-hosted concurrent build allowance, right? So for us, it was free to move to self-hosted, multiple self-hosted builds. Obviously, you got to run the self-hosted part yourself, but yeah. And then the second reason, and probably more importantly, is you have complete control of your build environment. So for example, for us, we wanted to add some additional tools to our build environment, and we could take the Docker image that they provide, write a new Docker file, which adds the additional tools that we wanted in our build environment, and then publish that as our Docker image that would become the agent for the self-hosted builds.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, so you're taking their agent and you're just customizing it to add a bit more stuff that's going to help you guys and your specific build requirements.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But you know what's weird about this? One of the funny things I found was like, when we first deployed this, it was deploying, and I was like, man, this is taking forever for these containers to spin up. What the hell is taking so long? And because normally containers spin up like seconds in Kubernetes, right? And not even that. And I looked at it, and so the Docker image for VSTS build agents, turns out it's 3 gig in size.
That's a huge image.
And I'm like, that's the biggest I've ever seen a Docker image, right? And I was like, where's that coming from? And you look at it, and the image that they rely on is like 200 meg or something. Like it's not tiny, but it's not gigantic either.
Right.
250 meg or something like that. And I was like, okay, cool. And so they go from the image that they rely on to the build that they've created, and they've somehow added like almost 3 gig of cruft. And I'm like, what, did you put all of Windows in there? Like what happened?
Somebody forget to delete the logs?
I don't know. It's kind of strange, but I haven't dug in any further than that. But yeah, so it turns out when you first boot these things, it takes a while, and it's because it's pulling 3 gig image from Docker Hub. That can take a little while.
Yeah, just a bit. That's interesting. That's a cool use case that you're using with that.
I published the Helm chart and published a blog for it, so you can go grab the Helm chart and spin build agents up if you want to self-host them.
Awesome. Thanks for sharing.
And the builds start really quickly, which makes me very happy.
Oh, that's awesome. And I also found this morning, I found the link in the Azure blog that refers to all this, you know, Azure Kubernetes services and using AKS along in Visual Studio and the tooling and stuff that was all announced at Build, I did find that the demo that Scott Hanselman used in the keynote, I think when he had that whole microphone issue and Scott Gu was holding it for him, they did publish the sample that you can go grab to go launch it in your own AKS cluster to play around with stuff and see it work. So
nice. Ooh, that's cool.
Yeah, I put that up there.
Could give it a shot.
You got some other stuff here that you found for us.
Yeah. Speaking of deprecations, we've got another one. Exchange Web Services. Possibly, I would argue, the most heavily used SOAP-based service in the world.
Mm.
I'm just going to throw it out there. This is probably one of the most used APIs in the world based on SOAP. I don't know. Like, I don't really know for sure, but my gut says that's probably the case. These things back a ton of stuff. Think of all of the Exchange clients in the world, like iPhones, for example, or Android phones or tablets or Outlook or third-party clients for Office 365 mail. Like, a lot of them use Exchange Web Services. And they're pretty old. So they've given us a couple of deprecation notice saying they're discontinuing basic authentication for EWS over the next 2 years with support ending on October 13th, 2020. I hope that's a Friday. Because on that Friday, mark my words, half of the internet is going to stop working. I bet, you put it in your calendar, I bet October 13th, 2020, Twitter is going to light up with, my mail's not syncing. I guarantee it. And they've said that they're not going to make any future feature investments or updates in those web services. It's a pretty big call given the gap between what's available with EWS and what's available in Microsoft Graph.
Oh, somebody may be hitting the pedal to the metal to try and get that feature gap a little bit narrower.
Well, I got 2 years, yeah. So good luck to you.
That's quite a bit of work there.
It's kind of funny, like the gap is huge, right? And I guess it's narrowing, but it's still pretty painful. Like we use at Hyperfish, we have to use EWS for some things. Because it's not available. One particular scenario, updating a person's photo in their Exchange mailbox directly, not through the graph. There are some situations where we have to go and nuke it at its source.
Mm-hmm.
And doing that is, that's one of the scenarios we use EWS for. The graph, you can go update somebody's photo through the graph, but it's more complex than it's always going to land in EWS. It depends if they've got a mailbox there and all that sort of stuff. And so you have to fall back to EWS for some stuff.
Mm.
In fact, I made a pull request to the EWS SDK for C# to go and allow people to push a photo as opposed to just getting a photo from an inbox, which is my claim to fame for EWS.
Did they accept it? They merged it in?
You know, what's strange is they've gone for like 3 years without accepting anything. And then suddenly, recently, there's been a whole lot of activity on the EWS SDK. Maybe they're getting it ready for not touching it again forever. They're like, we better merge everything now because we're not going to touch it.
Yeah,
it's really bizarre. There's been this massive flurry of pull requests being accepted into it, probably in the last 3-4 months, something like that. But it had not been touched for a really long time before that, and people were getting really pissed off. Like the Nougat version that's published was super old. I don't even know if they've updated it. But yeah, like to the point where I had to not use the Nougat and to pull the EWS SDK and build it myself and because it had a whole bunch of stuff in it that wasn't in the Nougat. So anyway, basic auth is dying and EWS, probably a good thing. OAuth is a better way to go with that. But I bet there are a bunch of clients that don't do OAuth.
Mm.
Yeah. Anyway, EWS can't go away anytime soon, but just basic auth will stop working.
Interesting stuff. Very.
Mm. Hey, remember Soma?
Oh, that's a name I haven't heard in a long time.
Now, there's a name I haven't heard in a long, long time.
Got my reference. Nice.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, so Soma, oh man, I'm going to balk his name.
I never do this.
Soma Somasgar, I think. I'm not sure I'm getting his name right. He used to be the CVP at Microsoft for developer division, what was called DevDiv back then, right? Which included Visual Studio and all the programming languages and the whole nine yards. Anyway, Some of our listeners may remember him from shows such as Build, etc. He used to be Scott Goo's old boss, I think, one day. Something like that. Anyway, so there's a piece of news that came up. There's a new dev-related platform thingy startup called Pulumi. P-U-L-U-M-I. I think I'm pronouncing it correctly.
Looks like it, yeah.
And the article is called Meet Pulumi, a Seattle-grown cloud startup that wants to be the development platform for the multi-cloud era. So it looks like what they're trying to do, reading between the lines here, is that they're sort of building a framework that lets you build once and run against anybody's cloud. And not like in a Kubernetes or a Docker kind of way, but like in a storage kind of way. So like if you wanted to take advantage of native storage capabilities at a cloud service, like Blob Storage or S3 and AWS, you just sort of have to program once against their API, I imagine. I think that's what they're doing. So I'm imagining they're going to do the same for a bunch of different services in these cloud providers. So you sort of build your app once and you can run it anywhere. It's hard to tell from this article exactly what it entails.
It's
Pulumi, but it was just an interesting name that popped back up.
Yeah, it is. It's interesting when you're trying to see what they're talking about doing. And the article doesn't seem to give you too much insight into understanding exactly what they're doing. Other, it kind of generates more questions for me.
Yeah. It talks a lot about the people, but not so much about the product.
Yeah, they say there's one thing that one of the guys that's behind it says, if you want to do containers, there are solutions for you. If you want to do serverless, there are solutions for you. But what if you want to do both? And so it's weird because it's like, I want to leverage the whole CAS side. I want to leverage the PaaS side. I want to leverage, but I also want to go serverless. And it's almost like they're, you know, with some of the background on dev tooling, you know, is it a framework? Are you just trying to make life easier for developers, or is it are you doing an abstraction layer on top of all this stuff? It's like it's a little unclear to exactly what they're doing. So
Looking at their websites, there's more detail than when I first saw this article. It says get code to the cloud faster and together. Spin up Colada. Deliver multi-cloud apps using containers, lambdas, and data services with Pulumi's cloud programming model for maximum productivity. Yeah, so it's a framework for using a bunch of these sorts of things together.
Mm.
What's interesting is the the website's Visual Studio-based colors, by the looks of it. are you on the website?
Yeah, that's a good observation.
It looks very Visual Studio-y, I've got to say. Nice work, Simon.
Have you noticed, though, that like the screenshot is, or the little animation they show of you using it, it refers to AWS, it is a Mac. It's very...
Yeah, well, technically, Soma's just an investor, right? So he's not sitting in there going, you got to build it for Azure. But I'm sure he's in the board going, you got to build it for Azure.
This is interesting. Yeah, because it doesn't... It focuses... The feel of it definitely focuses on mostly on AWS. It seems, at least.
Mm, gotcha.
Oh, it shows... No,
I'm sure.
If you go to their docs, I mean, it shows AWS, Azure, Google Cloud Platform, Kubernetes, GitHub, VSTS, NPM, Travis, JavaScript, Python, Golang, TypeScript.
Mm.
Basically all the popular buzzwords in the dev space today.
Yeah.
Cool stuff.
It's actually Solar, Dharma, Fana, Somo? Soma. There you go. Nice. Anyway, I just thought it, interesting seeing his name pop back up in the space. He works at Madrona, I think, Investments Now or something like that. So his side of it's more from the backing and financial side of it than running the company, but yeah.
Very cool.
CJ's Hyperfish automates the collection of user profile information from users in organizational directories such as Office 365, SharePoint, Active Directory, and HR systems. The secure service supports on-premises, hybrid, and online environments. Bring your directory to life at hyperfish.com.
AC's Voitanos delivers on-demand video-based training for developers on the latest SharePoint extensibility model from Microsoft in his course, Mastering the SharePoint Framework.
All right, AC, we've got a couple of minutes here to blast through our picks and wrap this thing up. What do you got for us?
I got a small one. It's kind of interesting. It's called Chromely. Are you familiar with Electron?
Yeah, that thing that Microsoft owns.
Yeah. they do.
Owns. I mean, it's open source, right? So it's exactly say they own it.
I guess they don't own it yet.
No, it hasn't closed. You're right, actually.
Yeah,
it's owned by, hasn't closed.
Yeah, it's owned by GitHub. It, yeah, scare everybody. So for those who don't know what Electron is essentially a platform or a framework, or I don't know what you would call it, but it's a way for you to build client-side apps or desktop apps in iOS and Mac and Windows and whatever, and Linux. And so, like, if you're familiar with Slack, or you're familiar with, I think the new Skype client uses it as well. Teams uses it. Visual Studio Code uses it as well. So that's what Electron is. Well, there's also a Electron.net option as well, which is one that is out there for .NET developers. Chromely is a .NET or .NET Core HTML5 Chromium desktop framework, is focused on building apps based on these two things called Ceph-Glue and Ceph-Sharp, which are implementations of an embedded Chromium without WinForms or WPF. Chromely uses Windows and Linux native GUI APIs as the thin Chromium hosts, but you can even extend it with WinForms or WPF if you want. So you can use this to build a single page application, HTML5 based desktop application with or without Node and NPM. So I'm curious to see how this works in terms of
this
performance.
It's Electron for .NET developers.
It's Electron for .NET developers, yeah.
Wow, that looks really cool.
Mm-hmm.
You see, that's something I could do. Like, I don't know if I could build an Electron app without a lot of pain and suffering, but this I could do.
It's interesting. They've got their wiki has a couple different examples where you're using React, we're using Angular, and we're using Vue.js if you want to see a couple different samples to it. So one of the big knocks that Electron has on it is that it can be a bit of a performance hog. And it's not so much because of Electron, it's because it uses multiple instances of Chrome every time you use it. And Chrome is not exactly known for the memory diet that they use to implement it. So I'm curious to see how this takes care of that, or if this addresses that concern or the issue at any time.
Gotcha. That's really cool. I might have to have a look at that. My pick. I don't really know how to say this other than Elon seems to be saving the world. So it turns out Elon decided to try and help the boys' soccer team that are trapped in the cave in Thailand, which as of today are starting to be rescued by divers. Anyway, you know, somebody not wanting to wait, Elon decided to go build a sort of mini submersible out of parts from a Falcon 9, or Falcon Heavy, I think, that is sort of a mini submersible for one kid. It's basically a tube with a bunch of tanks and weights and things strapped to it. And so they could put a kid in it and get them out through these tiny little passages and so forth. They've got some footage of this thing being tested in a pool and all this sort of stuff. Pretty amazing stuff. Anyway, these boys are probably going to be rescued successfully without Elon's help in this particular case. But I just thought it was really cool that he's sort of jumping in and deciding to do something about it and try and help, right? Whether it gets used or not for this use, I don't know, but maybe some other underwater rescue. Anyway, they've got this footage. Man, the thing looks, if you're claustrophobic, I'd rather die in a cave, but it's pretty rough. Like, it's kind of small. But hey, I guess if it's going to get people out alive, then, and those people are okay with being stuck in a coffin for a few hours as they're being dragged out underwater through a cave, man, then yeah, good on them.
I've seen the videos of this, of what they're doing.
This thing is nightmares to me. Oh my goodness.
Well, this, and then, I mean, I saw the video of them. There's a camera that they put in of a diver going through the cave to go in to rescue the boys, or at least one of the practices they did. They're doing it. And as of the time we're recording this, I think they've got half the kids out so far. But I'm with you. I mean, I'm not generally a panic attack kind of person, but I see this and my anxiety just goes through the roof. Like, I would have to be, I would probably have a complete panic attack and not survive the ordeal. I'd probably have to be drugged to get out of there.
Yeah, for sure.
More power to them.
All right, AC. Well, we won't see each other for a few weeks, so good luck. But yeah, we'll catch up again soon.
Yeah, man. Safe travels and have some fun on the vacation and say hi to the fam.
Will do. All right, dude. Cheers.
Take care.
Did you like this episode? Please tweet about it and drop a 5-star review in iTunes. Word of mouth recommendations are the most effective ways for us to grow the show. We'd really appreciate it. If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as an MP3 or WAV file and provide a link so we can play your question on the show. Our theme music is brought to you by Keith Ritchie. For more information on Keith's music, head to music.kritchie.com. You can subscribe to us in iTunes and Google Play Store by searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find show notes of each episode. You can also find us on Facebook searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or on Twitter at MS Cloud Show. And finally, sign up for our mailing list by heading over to our website and entering your email to interact with us, participate in upcoming interviews, and other cool stuff. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.